And welcome to the Department of Metal Antiquities.
Where we remember what everyone else has forgotten.
As always, I am Nick Cameron, also of the Glacially Musical Podcast. I am joined by my good friend, a regal man of noble bearing, the Dunk King of Leeds, United Kingdom, Duncan Evans. How are we doing today, buddy?
I like that introduction, Nick. I don't know about regal, but whatever, I'll take it for now. Yes, I'm doing all right. I've got my mint tea here. It's been a pretty good day. Getting very spring-like here in the UK. So yes, how about yourself? How are you doing?
I'm good. I've had a pretty busy weekend. Wife and I had a big date night on Friday. Yesterday was just a long day of getting a lot of stuff done. I actually did a bonus podcast with Keefe yesterday. Yesterday was Record Store Day in the United States. I am not sure if that is celebrated over there in the United Kingdom or in England or
yeah,
in
it
Europe
is. It
itself.
is. Yeah, it
And
is.
cooked a big dinner last night and did a huge breakfast this morning and cleaned the kitchen and mowed the yard. And I'm going to go clean the kitchen and make a big dinner. And it's just, wow, it never stops. My family is presently out seeing Dune 2, which is unfortunate because I don't get to see Dune 2 and my kid doesn't want to go. She said, oh, great, it's a 2-hour and 46-minute nap. All right, enjoy that one.
I need to watch June 1 again to remind myself what happened in June 1. So
yeah, that's probably accurate. But yeah. As it were, we are here talking about what this week, Duncan?
So this is an album by Bruce Dickinson. This is one of his solo albums from 1996 called Skunk Works, an interesting title. It's the third solo album by Bruce Dickinson, of course, most famous for being the singer of Iron Maiden.
Who's that?
Though by this stage, he had quit the band Iron Maiden. He'd left in 1993 and did not go back again until 1999. What do you know about this one then, Nick, about its background?
This one's interesting. There's that word again. Because when... When we were discussing the Bruce Dickinson new solo record, The Mandrake Project, on the Glacier Musical Podcast, it came up that Roy Z had done more albums with Bruce than I had thought. I was under the impression, because I was an idiot and I never looked it up, that Roy Z had only done Tyranny of Souls, which is still my favorite Bruce Dickinson solo record by far, even after today. Because that album is a 10 of 10, and... You know, usually somebody in a band like Iron Maiden who writes some of the music where they have all kinds of writers, usually your solo records are not going to come out 10 of 10 because if it were, you'd be the main writer in that band. But it is amazing. So I found out he had also done Accident of Birth and Balls to Picasso. He started with Bruce Dickinson in Bruce Dickinson's solo career. So the first two solo records were Roy Z and a couple of other guys that Roy Z knew. Roy Z, interesting, his real name is Roy Ramirez, which I did not know. And for a time, in the 80s, he did not want to go by his proper last name because he thought ethnic names were not trendy. So he went by Roy Zeramar. Get it?
Okay.
Do you see what he did there?
Is it backwards?
Yes, Ramirez backwards.
Right, I got it. Right, right.
However, right. Everybody just called him Roy Z for short. Anyway, kind of like how Tyrannosaurus Rex became T-Rex.
Yeah.
Because everybody just called him T-Rex anyway. So same kind of deal. But on the album right before this one, which is not Alive in Studio A, but Balls to Picasso. Balls to Picasso, Bruce Dickinson... created a band to tour this album. And in that band were a bunch of different people. And those different people included... Hang on, let me get there.
Alex Dixon on guitar.
Yep. Included Alex Dixon on guitar, Chris Dale on bass, and Alessandro Elena on drums. Completely new band.
Yes.
So Bruce Dickinson then decides, oh, you know what we should do? This band and I should record. So this is the band that he puts together to record Skunk Works. And as we have heard...
Just to cut in. Skunk Works was supposed to be a band, not the solo project, not the name of a solo album.
Correct. That is exactly what I was leading up to.
Right. Sorry.
As we have heard so many times, this originally they were going to call the band Skunk Works. And yes. The record label said, no, you are not. You are Bruce Dickinson, and that is all you are to us. So they did not believe that the music would sell it. They believed that Bruce's name would sell the music.
Sadly.
Now, here comes the question. Did it sell? No. It reached number 8 in Finland. It reached number 69 in Japan. It reached number 40 in Sweden. And it reached number 41 in the UK.
It's not terrible, not absolutely terrible. It hit four mainstream charts across Europe and Japan.
Yeah, two of them were Sweden and Finland, though.
Yeah, this is true.
I mean, nobody really is gonna go home, gonna go back to their record label and go, we were number 40 in Finland. I mean, come on. Or 40 in
Yeah.
Sweden, although 8 in Finland. I mean, that's good. Don't get me wrong, that's good. However, you may notice that there is no charting of any sort in the United States of America. And
Correct.
being as the United States of America is the most populous Western nation, that is the one where you want to hit the charts, because if you hit the charts in the United States, you have sold a lot more records.
Exactly.
Sorry, there's just a lot of us. There is just a lot of us. And yeah, so he tried, obviously, creating a new name for the band is because they're trying something new. And we'll get on to what that something new is. 1996. What kind of music was popular then? I
Well,
wonder.
we were in this post-grunge, pre-new metal period. So in terms of rock, I guess grunge had sort of had its day, but there was a lot of post-grunge stuff about. And then new metal was just starting to bubble up. So that was the cutting edge, really, was new
Correct.
metal.
Soundgarden is really huge right now. That Soundgarden, because Soundgarden was post-grunge, really, before post-grunge even existed. They were already over grunge when grunge blew up. So they did Bad Motorfinger, and then their next album, Super Unknown, was completely different. And every album after that was very much in that Super Unknown vein, and where it kind of blurs the line between post-metal and post-grunge, and it's just kind of, you know, it's like Nirvana plus Black Sabbath.
Yeah,
And
I can go with that, with a bit of prog rock in there as well.
correct. So there was a thing about the word skunk works. Oh, originally that's a military term, I believe.
Is that right? I don't know. I don't know anything about this at all.
Where was it? I saw something.
I feel like I saw something as well, actually, but I don't know where I saw it. So I don't know.
We'll skip that.
But we'll skip
We
that for
may come
now.
back to that. They did do a bit of a live thing for this, which not much happened with it. And my favorite thing about this album, my favorite little piece of trivia. Did you see who made the cover of this record?
Yeah, Storm Thorgerson of Hypnosis.
I'm not sure if this is a Hypnosis cover officially, but Storm is the one that did all the Pink Floyd covers, so it's an interesting cover. They actually had to bring in the tree.
Yes, they hired out a tree. I guess you hire it out with all its roots in a big tub or something, and you pop it where you want to put it, and then you take your photos, and then you bring it back again.
That is my favorite thing I've ever heard. They rented a tree.
Yeah,
And it's
exactly.
not, and they didn't rent a local tree.
No, they did not.
They rented a tree in England and trucked it up to Scotland in order to take this photo.
Exactly. Yes, and then they shaped it digitally in Photoshop to make it look more like the shape of a brain, which is a play on words on on Braintree, a town in Essex. So there you go.
Interesting. And I'm glad you pointed out that there was Photoshopped. I didn't know Photoshop existed in 1996. Actually, it
I
was
didn't either.
probably
Yeah, apparently so.
1995 because the album came out in February of 96.
Yeah, it will have been. Yeah, it will have been. But yeah, I guess it did exist back then.
Let me see here. Dur, dur,
But it's an interesting cover. It's got a sort of mirror, an almost mirror image of a guy standing underneath this brain-shaped tree looking out across a lake.
I didn't notice that it was brain shaped, but yeah, it definitely is. Oh, can you hear my next door neighbor is mowing his
I
lawn?
can
So
indeed. We can hear that, but it's fine.
hopefully that doesn't get recorded. I'm sorry. I'm gonna let you talk more for a little bit.
It'll be fine. Yeah, it'll be fine. Make sure you've got original sound turned off, and that'll be fine. So, yes.
Well, where do we go from here, I guess?
Okay, well,
So,
look, we can look at who produced the album. So Jack Endino produced this album, and he is most famous for producing Nirvana's debut Bleach, and also produced Mudhoney and Soundgarden. So he was very much connected with the Sub Pop label and with the grunge movement. So you can see where Dickinson and Co were going with this. They must have been wanting to ride that train a little bit, the grunge or post-grunge train that was happening at the time. This can be dodgy ground. We've done so many records where the bands that are known for a certain style decide to change based on what is the in version of rock at that particular time, the
and
contemporary.
how often does that ever work?
Well, generally it doesn't. Generally it doesn't, basically. But we'll find out about this one in a moment.
And I did find what I was looking for. The album name refers to the Lockheed Code for an elite military design group.
Aha, there you go.
I don't know what that means.
I don't know what that means either. But anyway, I think Lockheed is a weapons company, aren't they?
Yes, Lockheed Martin.
Lockheed Martin, yeah,
Yes,
exactly.
they are a definitely a, I would call them war profiteers, but
Yeah, I agree with you
since
there.
they profit off war. Anyway, moving on. Let's see. I'm gonna read a quote from Bruce regarding this album and this tour. I had this argument with my manager Rod, and he told me, "You're a heavy metal singer. You can't change. You can try, but you're stuck with it." I object to that. I don't mind being a heavy metal singer, but I object to anyone telling me I can't fucking change. Anyway, off we went into the Skunk Works thing, and at the end of it all, I was gutted. I should have had a grunge career right then because I was very angry, very disaffected, and I was poor.
Yeah, he was not having a good time at this point.
That smells like a little bit of entitlement on to me. Thoughts?
Yeah, it does, to be honest. Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. And he was never going to get a grunge career. And whilst, look, you are allowed to change, Bruce, but still, he is a heavy metal singer, and people aren't going to accept if he suddenly did a reggae record. It's just, that's going to be greeted with bemusement by his audience.
I
And
would
let's
buy a
face,
Bruce Dickinson reggae album.
yeah,
I would
and
not,
also
however, buy a Bruce Dickinson Zydeco record.
there you go. And at the end of the day, we'll get onto the track by track shortly, but this is still for the most part a heavy metal record. There
Yeah,
was
and that's kind of the thing. Whenever these guys try to make this change, they either don't know how or they can't fully commit to it.
That's
But
right.
I'm
That's
just gonna,
right.
I want to go back to that quote for just one second. I
Good.
should have had a grunge career right then. Really, dude? Grunge was over at this point.
Yeah.
It kind of like how Woodstock was the official end of the peace and love era.
Yeah.
Cobain's suicide was the end of the original grunge era. All
Yeah.
at that moment in time, all of the innocence and spontaneity that made it special went right out the window.
Yeah.
Kind of like the Woodstock Festival. It did the exact same thing. It took away all the innocence and all of the naivety about what they really were doing. Sorry, dude, and you know what? It's like Mr. Spock. What's Mr. Spock's real name? Leonard
You're
Nimoy.
asking me, Leonard Nimoy. Okay. You mean the
Leonard
actor?
Nimoy. Yeah, the actor.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
And how many acting roles did Leonard Nimoy have after portraying Mr. Spock?
Not many, as far as I know.
He had quite a few, and most of them were cameos.
Right.
Because at that point in time, he was so good at Spock. I mean, he actually portrayed a character lacking emotion completely. And after, when you are so good at something like that, it is hard for people to accept you the other way. We spoke last week about Jim Carrey, Tom Hanks, and these actors saying, "I can do more than comedy." And lots of times it works, but most of the time it doesn't. At least in terms of working, I mean, in terms of being popular and profitable. Because as they said in Man on the Moon, it is show business. Show business. Without the business, there is no show. Go ahead.
You're there. You glitched
Yep,
for a
yep,
minute,
yep,
but I
yep,
think we're
yep.
okay. I think we're okay. So, yeah, okay. So, what else do we know about this? Well, let's just have a little look here. I believe they released a single, two singles, in fact, Back from the Edge and Solar Confinement. I don't think either of them did particularly great. One of them got to, yeah, Back from the Edge got to number 68 on the UK singles chart, so not brilliant. And the other one presumably did not chart at all. In terms of reviews, I've not got any contemporary reviews here from the time, but there are some pretty favorable reviews, which are more recent ones. AllMusic gave it 3 stars, Collector's Guide to Heavy Metal gave it 8 out of 10, and Rock Hard gave it 8 out of 10. So people seem to dig this one. I've also read a lot of positive comments about this from YouTube, where I listened to this. A lot of people saying they've rated this as Bruce's best solo album, no less. So, I don't think this was badly received at the time. But I think the thing is, with Bruce Dickinson being so famous for being in Iron Maiden, and with him having a couple of relatively famous solo albums, Chemical Wedding and the other one that I've
Balls to
forgotten,
Picasso.
Tattooed Millionaire as well. This one just
Oh
seems like
yeah.
more
There were
of a
three. It
break.
was Balls to Picasso, the first one you said, and Tattooed Millionaire.
Yeah. So this one just seems to have fallen under the radar a little bit in the subsequent period and become a forgotten record.
Should point out, it came out at a time where it was going to be forgotten. It comes out in 1996, and in the United States of 1996, the world had changed. Popular music had changed. Leading up to that point in the late 80s and early 90s, up into 94-ish, there were legitimate channels to get heavy metal to consumers. There was Headbangers Ball in St. Louis. We had a radio show called Monday Night Metal. There was another show on college radio called The Mosh. There were a lot of these where they could get out. And Balls to Picasso was featured extensively on Headbangers Ball. However, in 1996, this Headbangers Ball no longer exists. Leading up to that point, MTV had started changing what Headbangers Ball was, and what they said was it got to the point where we weren't showing anything any different on Headbangers Ball, so we didn't see any point of even having the show anymore. My thought process was, well, whose fault is it that you changed what you were playing on it to play into alternative music on it? It was obviously your fault, but you recognized that you made a mistake, so you just canceled it rather than you could have recognized you made a mistake and fixed it. But, they didn't do that. They didn't do that. So in 1996, there is no channel to get this out. Bruce Dickinson was never going to be played on mainstream rock radio. Bruce Dickinson was never going to be played on modern rock radio, even if he tried to be grungier. Slang did not get played on the modern rock, the alternative rock networks. Definitely didn't get anything shown on Alternative Nation or 120 Minutes on MTV. And that's kind of the exact same place Bruce Dickinson finds himself in. He writes a record, he writes and records an album, presumably because he loved the songs, hopefully because he loved the songs. But he writes and records an album that is not going to have a built-in audience and is not going to reach the audience he's trying to get. Hence, the
I think
album gets
this is
lost.
slightly true. Yes. So I believe they toured it, and they brought in a cover of The Prisoner as well as some previous Bruce Dickinson back catalogue songs. There's actually a bonus disc which came out in the 2005 expanded edition of this album, which has a full or most of at least a live concert. Oh no, actually no, sorry, it's only 4 live tracks. Plus some other bonus tracks. So no, you can get 4 live tracks with the bonus edition. But yeah, they
Four
toured it.
more, four more. Oh, wait, no, because it's the same ones.
It's the
Okay, I
same
see.
ones as on
The
the other bonus.
expanded edition has the live. Yeah, because they recorded some. They recorded a couple of the shows, but they only ever released like 5 songs from them, which were and the, yeah, and the last one was The Prisoner. And I mean, if you're gonna do an
Exactly.
Iron Maiden song, that's obviously the one your fans want to hear, right?
Well, So, yeah, man. Well, that's most of what I've got with this. Well, apart from to say that I think the band broke up soon after this, and then for Bruce's subsequent record, which I've forgotten what it was called, the band was different again.
No,
basically.
it was not different. He went back to the Roy Z
So he went
automobile.
back. So, but it was different from this one. They went
Correct.
back
And the
to
next one
right.
was Accident of Birth.
Sure, sure,
So
sure, sure.
his studio albums were Tattooed Millionaire, Balls to Picasso, Skunk Works, Accident of Birth, The Chemical Wedding, Tyranny of Souls, and Mandrake Project.
There you go. Right. Nice.
So
All
yeah, so
right.
he goes back to he goes back to the previous lineup that he had had before, and it just goes back to being a normal, Bruce Dickinson solo thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh yeah, with Adrian Smith on the guitar as well for his next one. But anyway, that's a whole other
We should have
thing.
done that one.
Well, maybe we can always do it next time or another time. So, well, I'm pretty much ready to get on with the track by track if you are.
I think we have beaten down everything that there is to beat down leading up to it. So
Sure.
let's just go ahead and we're not we're, the, go with the route we're going, we're not going to win the space race, but we'll try.
Okay, so this starts with a 6/8 syncopated riff in a Lydian mode. It's very prog rock. It's a bit Soundgarden-y as well, noticeably. Some really good vocals, some nice screams, and some nice riffs in here. And there's a key change with the guitar solo. Again, it feels like it's a bit between prog rock and grunge. So I think on the Wikipedia it mentions Rush and Soundgarden, and I'm definitely hearing both of those bands as influences on this. And you know what? I think it's pretty cool. And actually, what I noticed, and I'm going to be repeating myself a bit here, it's not a million miles away from the more recent, more prog rock version of Iron Maiden on albums such as Senjutsu, where they're a bit more proggy. They have some more long form songs. There's some different scales and time signatures and keys involved. So you know what? I liked this song. I thought it was a great opener.
I would say that there is definitely some crossover from what Iron Maiden was doing at the time with the X Factor, I believe it was called, and then
Yeah,
Virtual
with Blaze
11
Bailey.
with Blaze Bailey. That is correct. This song, it starts off with that kind of underwater guitar sound that here we go, we're Soundgarden, we're grungy, we're subversive kind of sound. And I kept turning up the volume for like the first 10 seconds of the song because it was like that it was that underwater tinny kind of sound. And I thought, okay, that's not right. I don't have it turned up enough. No, I had it turned up enough. That is actually the sound they were going for. It kicks into the full band, and then all of a sudden Bruce Dickinson is waxing poetic about the space race and if we should even be going into space. Okay, I don't know what's going on in your head for you to want to write about this. Maybe write songs about television shows. I think you're better at that than trying to come up with this philosophical idea of should humanity be venturing into space? I don't hear you asking about should humanity be venturing into the skies, Bruce, with your pilot's license and your little hat. So you know what? Maybe just take a breath and come back from the edge.
Okay, track two, Back from the Edge. So this is really similar harmonically to the previous track. It's also in the Lydian mode and has the It's in the same key and similar, well, the same chords actually, just in a slightly different groove. But there's this really interesting snare-based building but tense beat that's going on. And then it builds up into more of a normal beat and it's pretty cool. The chorus here is maybe not the best thing ever. And this is perhaps going to be a running theme as well in what I'm going to be saying about this record. Some of the tracks lack the big, strong, powerful chorus which an Iron Maiden track would have. And which you really want Bruce to build into. So that's perhaps lacking here. But then we've got a nice melodic solo on a slide guitar. And again, I'm noticing it's reminiscent of a later Iron Maiden, what's the album? The 1999 one that they did, A Brave New World
Brave New
and
World.
Beyond. Yeah, Brave New World and Beyond. And then later on,
But
actually, they
all
do
of
the
that
cover.
started with the Blaze Bailey records.
Yeah, maybe so, maybe so, yeah. And then there's a later chorus where it's just the hook repeated, and that's better. And I think they should have put more of that in earlier, personally. But you know, that's just me. But I still like this track, but I didn't think it was as good as the first one.
I think that might be the absolute takeaway from the podcast. I liked this track, but it wasn't as good as the first one. They definitely started strong with Space Race, except for the fact that the lyrics were completely nonsensical. And yes, we did not get the Bruce Dickinson payoff. And I think we all want a Bruce Dickinson payoff. When he gets to that ginormous chorus, that like in The Trooper, obviously I can't do it or carry a tune in a bucket. But you all know, I mean, hopefully you heard what Bruce does when I did that horrible wounded quail going down. But we don't get that pretty much on this whole record. We don't get that big, expansive Bruce because he's moody and he thinks about things now. That's why he's writing stuff about coming back from the edge and the space race and blah, blah, blah. You are absolutely right when you say this song sounded a lot like the previous track. It sounded way too much like the previous track. In fact, these two songs should have been separated. In fact, there should have been a restraining order against Back from the Edge filed by Space Race, so they could not come within one album of each other.
Like
It
it.
would have made these songs way better. And unfortunately, when you have these two songs that have a similar vibe, a similar mood, and a similar lack of payoff, you wonder if when they wrote the second one, they are just succumbing to inertia.
Well done, Inertia, track three. So this starts with some clean guitar, minor key strumming, melancholy vocals, nice and dry, a little quiet, a little low in the mix for my liking, but that's fine. So it's the emotional song here, but it's working for me. It's good. And then it kicks in with this big chorus and it's steady to fast. And you've got these huge, dark, clashy chords. And it's a bit Soundgarden again. And a good, catchy main hook. A small solo, which is pretty cool. And I'm liking the vocal style. He's growling a bit on here and I'm liking it. And it breaks back down to clean at the end. And you know what? This was back to good for me, for want of a more articulate phrase. They were very much back on track with this track with Inertia. I enjoyed this one a lot.
Yes, I like this song, and I remember him singing about inertia. I'm thinking that's kind of weird, but I mean, I really should stop talking about the lyrics on this album because none of the lyrics are good. I mean, they're all questionable at
I
best.
didn't really pay a whole lot of attention to the lyrics, honestly.
Frankly, that's the smarter play than what I did. Yeah, not a bad song. You know, where it's still, I don't know. I don't necessarily want a Bruce Dickinson solo record to be Iron Maiden Jr., but I definitely want the Bruce Dickinson of Iron Maiden singing on his solo records. I don't want to hear tortured poet Bruce Dickinson.
Yeah, that's fair.
And you know what? That's a matter of personal taste. That is not saying, I mean, his vocals on this entire record are very good. However, if I go to McDonald's and I order a Big Mac and they hand me a McChicken, I'm not going to be happy, even though the McChicken is still objectively a good sandwich. But you're just going to have to, you're going to go back, and you gotta believe in the next track. You gotta believe in the next album. You gotta believe in the artist. You just gotta have faith.
Track four, Faith. So this starts with a chuggy, steady to fast, properly heavy metal riff. And it gets very prog rock for the verse once the vocals come in. It's jumping all over the place. There's chords diving into different keys and all sorts. And it's good. It's working for me at least. There's a key change with the chorus, and it's like a slightly more jazz chordified Iron Maiden. But a bit less riffy and more textural for that chorus. And it breaks down for an odd time signature massive metal riff somewhere in the middle, which is cool. And then we've got a melodic solo. It's effecty, a little bit Soundgarden style again, with some wah-wah on. So you've got this sort of Leslie speaker cabinet effect on that type of modulation effect and wah-wah as well. And you have another solo a while later, which is more bluesy. And I liked this track again. Perhaps the chorus wasn't the absolute best in the world, I will say, but I liked the track. I liked the feel of it. I liked the energy of it. I liked the power of it. And I thought Bruce was doing a great job with his vocals. So, yeah, good track.
Definitely not a bad track. However, when we get that Soundgarden-y, like that super unknown, I that is the best description I can give of the guitar sound when this stuff comes up. That super unknown guitar solo sound that sounds underwatery, distorted, and it sounds wrong, and everybody just makes it just feels so right because they're all so disaffected and angry and poor. Signed Bruce Dickinson.
Yes.
It is what it is. I mean, it's not. Is it a good song? Yes. Is it a quality song? Yes. Is it an honest song? I don't know. What I do know is it's not what I am looking for from a Bruce Dickinson solo record. And I had Alive in Studio A. I bought it a number of years ago, and which is the, you know, before this version of Iron Maiden. And frankly, I did not like it even a little. I like this better than that. But at this point in time, we do not have a Bruce Dickinson solo record that I'm really digging. And I'm quickly trying actively to stay involved in this album at this point. Sorry. As for the next track, there is no linking pun, so I will just tell you it is called Solar Confinement.
It is indeed. So this has jangling, cleanish guitars to start. And it kicks in with some fast riffs and massive guitars. And it goes down to those clean guitars again for the verse. We have some nice melodic vocal parts. And we've got a strong and catchy chorus, something that's been a little bit lacking from one or two of the tracks previously. So nice. I'm really liking this. The strong, catchy chorus is there. We need more of that. And again, this was a bit reminiscent of later Iron Maiden as well. So I thought this was a really cool track. It's like if Maiden had taken a little bit of a different path, and you know, it's not something that you wouldn't quite want Maiden to play this track. It would be a little bit too far outside their wheelhouse, but you could see if when they reformed with Dickinson, if they just decided to go a little bit more out there, they could have ended up with something a bit like this. I'm glad they didn't do that. But it's not a million miles away from what Maiden did do when they got back with Bruce. So again, I'm liking this track. It's a thumbs up from me on this one.
We seem to be having a role reversal this week. Where
yeah.
Duncan loves the oddly, weirdly stuff. And that's honestly what this podcast is about. This podcast is not about taking a dump on our favorite artists, although we routinely do. Take dumps yeah. on our favorite artists, which is unfortunate because you know what? A lot of times some of these people make really terrible choices.
Yes.
And we are panning for gold here. And if anybody understands what panning for gold is, it is not a high percentage proposition. It is a low percentage proposition. So you just keep panning and hope you find it. As for Dream State, I mean, right now, we this is the song where he feels ways about things, and it's kind of like Stand. This is just Stand for me. He's trying to do more than sing about TV shows and books and that he's read and watched, but he just doesn't have it. If he just keeps sleeping though. Don't sleep on this, or else you're going to find yourself in a dream state.
All right, so dream state. This is mid-paced, jazzy, clean guitars start this off, and we've got side stick drums. So this is quite jazz, quite low-key. And then you've got these lower register than usual vocals from Bruce Dickinson, and it's a bit Mark Lanegan style, maybe a bit Screaming Trees style. And or even Nirvana, he sounds a bit like when Kurt Cobain sings low on it, excuse me. But then it kicks in for a big chorus, and it's a pretty good chorus. And I'm liking the loud, quiet dynamics between the verses and choruses. So this is something that the Pixies did. This is something that Nirvana did. It's very much a grunge trait or trope, is the loud, quiet dynamic, and they're doing a lot of that. But it works. There's a middle eight with some lead guitar. It's quite rough and a bit grungy as well. It gets a little bit repetitive after a while, this one, and it's maybe not the strongest melodically, but I thought it was quite cool. It was different. It was not what I'd expect Iron Maiden to do, but that's fine. I felt like this This solo album allows here, at least, Bruce Dickinson to go in a bit of a different direction and to explore some territory that wouldn't be acceptable within the confines of Nirvana, but which still he can apply his voice to. And I didn't feel like it spoilt it. I felt like the big choruses are still metal enough. They still sound like Bruce Dickinson. He's not suddenly going into fully blown jazz, but he's bringing in a few elements of these different styles. And I think it works again. So I like this track.
Yeah, he is definitely doing something different. And I will give him all the props in the world for doing something different. However, I ordered a Big Mac, sir. And the response is, sir, this is a Wendy's. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it
But
does. Yeah.
okay. And the worst part about this is it feels honest. It's not like when Def Leppard did Slang, or when Poison did God, what's the name of what was Stand?
I can't remember the name of the album. Can't
We
remember
did
it.
it. We
Sorry.
did that album.
I know we did it. Yeah.
It's not like those albums where it sounds so false and so plastic. Maybe that's why I don't like it as much as you, because it is too honest. It is too legitimately this kind of music. And I really dislike most of Soundgarden. And
Oh, wow. Okay. I really like them a lot.
that, okay, so now we can completely understand why we have very different opinions on this album. I look, Chris Cornell was a truly amazing and wonderful talent. I'm not saying anything other than what and then that, because it is true, it is honest. He was amazing. He was one of the greatest singers in his generation, if not the greatest singer of his generation. However, the way he chose to sing is not my cup of tea. It does not go down my street. And then you get that underwatery stuff from Kim Thayil, and I just don't like the way that music sounds. It just doesn't move me. And the problem is like I said, this album is very grungy, very post-grunge, very Soundgarden-y, and it's very honest. It's very true. However, I will not accept the truth.
Well, I will not accept the truth is track seven. I almost missed that pun there.
Yeah, I know. I slid that one in real nice.
Did, yeah. So this starts with a big, monstrous, crashing riff to begin with. And then we're into clean guitar arpeggios. This is mid-paced. And he's doing his Mark Lanegan thing again. It's languid and forlorn and bluesy and drawled. And I like it, I have to say. And then the big, crashing riff comes back again. And then we have a chorus over that big riff, and it's strong and simple. And there are some brilliant screams from Dickinson around here. The classic Dickinson scream is back and it's here. There's a mini guitar solo, and then the chorus happens again with different chords underneath, which are even more post-grungy. And again, I really like this. It mixes the Mark Lanegan style, sort of almost, what style would you call that? Almost
Who's
slightly
Mark
American.
Lanegan? I don't know that
Yeah.
name.
Oh, he's from the Screaming Trees, but he does solo
Oh,
as
okay.
well. And it's kind of, well, how can I describe it? Sort of dark Americana post-punk, I suppose.
That's a
Something like
lot of things to put together in one statement. That's
that.
all
We're
I'm going to
talking
say.
about kind of Nick Cave-ish, that type of thing.
Oh, okay. It's like Guided by Voices, but like darker Guided by
Maybe,
Voices kind of thing.
yeah, dark folkish, yeah.
I'm trying to get in my alternate grunge cred now at this point in
Yeah,
time.
that's. I think that's probably about right. Yeah. So again, I liked this. It's mixing that style with the classic Dickinson screams over the choruses, and it's cool. It was catchy and powerful for me, so I liked it. And Nick's going to completely disagree with me now.
Yes, I am. What I will say about this record is Bruce Dickinson was really, really smart on this one, as he didn't write the music. He wrote his parts, he wrote his vocal melodies, and he allows Alex Dixon, who, as you may recall, is the guitar player on this album, he lets Alex Dixon write all the music. And except for one track, track 12, they wrote all of it. And because of that, I think that's why the album comes off as very honest. Unlike Slang, unlike a lot of those, not Carnival of Souls by Kiss, because they were completely, I mean, they nailed that one. But it comes off as very honest, because somebody, the guy they got to write, the guy who wrote the music, was fully into this and he fully committed. It's just, I know I'm repeating myself and I'm sorry. A lot of this sounds very samey to me. It reminds me of years ago, I'm at a soccer match with, and I'm talking to a friend of mine named Tim. And he's talking about how he hears about these black metal bands like Sunbather and all this kind of stuff. They're talking about them on NPR at the time. And he says, oh, I heard them describe what they're doing and I'm interested. So I listen to it and I go, wow, this is still the same music that I've always heard and didn't like. And I'm like, I know. You have got to be able to hear the slight difference. Like if you listen to Twilight Fauna, Sunbather, and Mayhem, and you are, and I'm wearing a Mayhem shirt, by the way, if you are not fully versed in those artists, you are not going to hear the difference between them, even though to somebody who's into black metal, all three of those bands are very different.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem, is I am not well versed enough in this kind of music to be able to pick out the songs that are different from the songs that I've been hearing. So sure. It all sounds very samey and very boring to me. It's just, it's boring. I listened to this thing like 2.5 times today. I tried my best to get inside the machine.
All right, Inside the Machine, track 8. So this has some big riffs and then some major key proggy stuff with that Soundgarden meets Rush thing going on. Some nice vocal lines over the top, which are very much in line with the Soundgarden meets Rush paradigm. And it's pretty cool. It's Mixolydian mode that they're using at this point, which is much
better. That is my favorite thing you have said all day. Mixolydian. I love that.
There you go. Beloved of Soundgarden, actually, that particular mode, that scale. It has a nice chorus. It's more like emotional pop than Iron Maiden, but it works. And again, I'm thinking this is good because it allows Bruce to express himself in a slightly different way and for him to lend his voice to a style which Maiden would not really be able to get away with, but which actually works for him, fits with his voice. It's still kind of metal. It's still kind of hard rock, but it just pushes a little bit further in a different direction or pulls in a bit more of a different influence than they would normally get away with if it was Maiden. It has a cool melodic solo. And you know what? These are good, strong melodies. And for me, this is a decent song.
All of them are decent songs. There is nothing really bad on this record. It's that Rush meets Soundgarden thing. And Kim Thayil once said, when he was asked about, you know, how did Soundgarden contribute to metal? And Kim Thayil responds with, I hope we didn't contribute to metal even a little. I hate metal. Okay, we know you were just trying to be cool for the cameras, Kim. You had already done a metal track with Dave Grohl, on the previous podcast subject. Thank you for the anime face you just gave me. Duncan just clicked he's messing with Zoom filters. Anyway.
Yeah.
Previous podcast subject, Probot. Sorry, I couldn't remember the name of it. Probot, which I have on vinyl. I finally got a copy of that. And for not $100 million, FooFighters.com was selling it for like 25. Yeah. And I did not buy 4 to flip on Discogs because I'm a good human being. Anyway, where was I? Okay, so yeah, Kim Thayil talks about, oh, you know, I don't want to be a part of metal, blah, blah, blah. Well, I'm sorry. You don't get to not be a part of metal. You are half of what creates stoner metal. I mean, I looked at the Soundgarden guys and I assume they all, you know, got stoned. They just look like, they just look the type. And then they played that wah-wah affected kind of groovy kind of thing. And then when kids hear that and then they hear Black Sabbath, it's easy to make that leap. And that's just what's happened. You can say whatever you want. You can't, but you can't change it. You'll never be able to flip the head switch. Whatever that means, Nick.
Head switch, track 9. So, starts with a big fast riff that I found very reminiscent of something off Soundgarden's Bad Motorfinger. You've got these major key vocals over the top, and we're very much in grunge or post-grunge territory here. So we're out of the heavy metal sound, very much into that grungy thing. Nice, catchy melodies, great sound with the layered up guitars. You've got a wah-wah noise rock solo in the middle here, and it's nice. Maybe lacks a big chorus, this one, and then it's kind of over too quickly. And this one just feels like it was building up to something which never came. You had this really nice verse, and you thought, when's the chorus going to come? And then another really nice verse. Okay, the chorus is going to come now, and then it finished. So this one didn't work so much for me. It was all the ingredients that are there are great, but there's just a big ingredient missing, which is the big, strong chorus. And they just seemed like they'd done the radio edit where they just cut all the choruses out and to make the shorter version that way, instead of cutting down the verses and leaving the choruses in. So still a good song, but not as brilliant for me.
Not as brilliant. That's fair. This is the shortest song on the record. It's only 2 minutes and 14 seconds long. It is flanked by a 3.5 and a 4.5 track. Yes, we could have had a little bit more on this one. However, the album at this point, this album does run a little bit long. Not crazy long, but it does run too long for me, considering how samey the tone is, how samey the chords are. This album would have really benefited by ending right now. Because we've got maybe one more song. We've got four more tracks. We've still got 10.
It's only about 47 minutes, though, in total.
It's 48 minutes, but to me, this album is perfect at 35.
Fair enough.
Because of the way, because of the similar chord choices, because of the similar tone choices, 35 minutes is a perfect length for this one. Going 48 is about three songs too many. But that's a sum up kind of thing. But moving on into Meltdown, which don't have one, by the way.
Yeah. Well, Meltdown is starts with a syncopated jazz metal kind of riff, and you've got these dark, clangy arpeggios in between the riff. Some nice, tense and aggressive screams and catchy verse melodies, and there's some good energy and great power here. Some nice lead guitar textural things going on. So I like this track, but again, maybe it lacks that really strong chorus. We just don't quite get to that payoff. As you said, that big Bruce Dickinson payoff is not here. It's lacking. It's a little bit Alice in Chains, borrowing from a different grunge band this time, perhaps, especially in the middle eight and then the solo. I was noticing those Alice in Chains vibes going on. But yeah, not a bad track, but perhaps lacking that chorus again.
And that's what makes this album so honest. If you removed the very obvious post-grunge or Soundgarden-y or Alice in Chains-y tropes, you know, the effecty wah-wah, the underwater guitars and all that, if you removed all that, it would still be very much a post-grunge record. And part of that is because we never get that Bruce Dickinson payoff. He just doesn't do it. It's like Steve Vai's previous podcast subject, Steve Vai Flexible.
Yeah.
We never get a Steve Vai payoff on that record.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I don't like it. And that's why I got rid of my copy.
Wow.
I did. I sold it to somebody, a nice gentleman in Canada. Anywho, moving on to track 11. If you're looking for a Roman Empress, look for Octavia. I don't know, something.
Okay, Octavia. Well, this starts with mid to fast groovy Mixolydian riffs, and we're a little bit in Soundgarden territory again. As I said earlier, the Mixolydian mode gets used a lot by Soundgarden. It breaks down to some more relaxed strumming, and it's psychedelic. It's like that psychedelic Soundgarden thing where they're mixing.
How did we get to track 11 of this record
without me mentioning psychedelic? Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, yeah, exactly. But here it is right now. So, you know, it's like when Soundgarden are bringing in a little bit of the Beatles or the Beach Boys, but they're also blasting out these heavy riffs at the same time. It's similar to that. So some nice lead guitar early on with an octave pedal, a bit of a solo, and a nice strong chorus with big power chords behind. And this is what some of the strong songs are lacking for me. This did it. This had the big, strong, powerful chorus, so this was great payoff for me. There's another solo, and it's notably unmetal. It's heavy, but it's unmetal. We're very much into that psychedelic post-grunge thing. And then this is short and sweet. I think it's 3 minutes and something. Let's have a look. 3 minutes 15. So just over 3 minutes. One of the shorter tracks on the album, although they're all quite short. But yeah, good track, bolstered by a brilliant chorus.
Yep, it took this long to get to psychedelic. This whole record has been psychedelic. To quote Tony Harrison, "This is an outrage." Had to get my
Indeed.
Mighty Boosh in. Anyway, it's we're just eating fruit from the same tree at this point. And at this point in time, this album is well and done for me. In the 90s, they didn't really think about how long a record should be. And we are suffering under that because albums got longer and longer in the 90s.
This
Anyway,
is
we're going to now move on to track 11, the penultimate track, the only song with anybody else writing. Chris Dale, the bass player, also got a co-writing credit on this one. This is you might think it's based on a movie, but it's not. Inner Space.
okay, so Inner Space starts fast in a major key with a minor fourth chord, which is the Radiohead thing. They do that a lot. Lots of bands do it, but anyway. And you've got this tense pedal bass underneath, harmony vocals, a strong chorus, which is great. Good feel, big energy, big chorus, good chorus with a nice riff at the end of it. But it's still quite unmetal, so I can see why Nick might not like it. It has a bluesy solo. I enjoyed this track, but maybe it's not for Nick. Let's find out.
No, it's not for Nick. And I'm looking at the lyrics because I didn't remember them. I wanted to make sure that when I said it wasn't based off the Randy Quaid, I'm sorry, Dennis Quaid movie, Inner Space. I wanted to make sure that was accurate. It's definitely not. I see the scars of action writhing round your face. Too much inactivity and home's a lonely place. Throw your beauty because you know that it won't last. Oh my God. Jesus Christ. I mean, this could have been anybody's lyrics from 1996. This is, I mean, if this had been on Kiss's Carnival of Souls, I would have thought, okay, that's fair. Because it's completely just normal. We're all so ugly. Get rid of everything. I feel ways about things. My mom grounded me this weekend. It's so juvenile. So remember what I said at the top of the show. Do not read the lyrics to this record. None of them are offensive, but they're all terrible. This is not a good album for quality lyrics. I said what I said. Yeah, I mean, it's more of the same. And the thing is I'm tired of the same. The same has been going on for now 12 tracks. Even though it's got a co-write by somebody else, it just doesn't feel different. So now we will finish up with the ultimate track, Strange Death in Paradise, also the longest.
Okay, so this starts with a massive slow 6/8 textural groove. And we're back in the Lydian mode again. Some nice vocal melodies in the verse when it breaks down dynamically as well. And you've got this very Soundgarden bridge, which I thought might be a chorus because I wasn't sure. It was pretty cool. But again, I was thinking this is lacking the strong chorus because I can't tell if that bit's the bridge or the chorus, even though everything else around it is good. And then you've got this breakdown, which is totally fine. That works. And then it builds up. And finally, we get into the big chorus hook and it's repeated loads and loads of times. And yes, this is great. It took a while to get there. And what they do is they basically make the chorus the coda. So they just repeat the chorus hook loads and loads of times. And it's like the last third of the track is just all chorus. And it's the only time you hear the chorus, but it works. So yeah, it's emotive, it's powerful. You get some big Dickinson screams. It's great for me. Strong ending to the record, and it ends. So, thumbs up from me on this one.
Thumbs up for me too. The record ends.
Ha
So I guess if it's not clear, I am a Bennett on this one, and I'm a Bennett on this one not because it's a bad record. As we have said many, many times, the grading scale of this show is completely, it's a binary rating scale. It is pass or fail. And what the what it takes, the qualification of pass is, will I listen to this album again on purpose? Will I seek it out again, or will I never listen again? And it is just not the music I want. If I'm going to listen to Bruce Dickinson, I've got Tyranny of Souls and I've got the Mandrake Project, which are both sitting on my shelf. And I'm probably actually going to listen to one of those this afternoon to kind of get this one out of my head. And that's the thing. He went and he made a great post-grunge dream metal record. It's really great. There's nothing wrong with this album. It's not bad. It's just not what I want from Bruce Dickinson. If I go to McDonald's, well, I already said McDonald's. If I go to a steakhouse, I don't want a hamburger. And that's what this is to me. Bruce Dickinson took out everything he can do that makes him the man, the myth, the legend, the man, you know, you never don't question Bruce Dickinson. Well, today I am questioning Bruce Dickinson's choices. I'm not questioning Bruce Dickinson, but I'm questioning his choices. Because we did not get Bruce Dickinson on this record. We got like this other guy, and I don't want this other guy. This other guy reminds me of 100 million other dudes, and I don't like those dudes, and I don't have those dudes' records. So I'm not going to get this record. So for me, it's a Bennett, but I think there's going to be a lot of people, if they discover this album, will really enjoy it. It's a quality record. It's just not a quality record for Nick.
That's fair enough. I mean, I beg to differ that we don't get Bruce Dickinson on this record. I think we do. I think we've got him in a different context. I think we've got him pulling in different influences with his voice, but we still get plenty of those big classic Bruce Dickinson screams. It's just that what's going on around them is a little bit different and more varied and more influenced by other styles and genres that were going on perhaps at the time.
I don't want other. I want Bruce Dickinson choruses that shake me to the marrow of my bones, and that's not here.
I get it, man. But yeah, for me, this is definitely a spin it. It's not up there with classic Maiden, but as I say, it's different. It provides a bit of different context for Bruce Dickinson's voice to be able to adapt and flow into. I think that works. I think it's good to hear his voice being applied with that juxtaposition of other different styles that we're not perhaps used to hearing him do. And also, let's face it, even though, okay, this is post-grungy, this is Soundgarden-y, there's still a lot of metal stuff in there. There's still a lot of big riffs, a lot of cool riffs, a lot of massive guitar solos. There's a lot of the things which Iron Maiden would be doing. And as I've said a few times, some of this is actually quite reminiscent of the later, more prog rock versions of Iron Maiden that we have still going on today since 1999, since that Brave New World record. So for me, it's definitely a spin it. And yeah, that's it really for me.
Everybody has differing opinions, and we have two people on this. We have two co-hosts on this show, and we have similar yet very different musical tastes. And that's why we work well together, because maybe you agree with me, maybe you agree with Duncan. Or, you know, maybe you can agree with both of us or none of us. Maybe whatever. Anyway, if you've made it this far, thank you very much for listening to the Department of Metal Antiquities. This show is a labor of love for us. We have fun doing it. And I feel like we have got some pretty good content. And if you could help us get that content to the masses, into a little in front of some other people, that would be great. If you could subscribe to whatever podcast service you are listening to and give a star review and a rating. And if you could tell one person about this show, one person that likes Iron Maiden or Soundgarden, you know, that's the person that we want you to send this to. Even if that's just tweeting a link or sending a direct message or putting it on your Facebook. But even if you don't do that, we appreciate you listening all the way through. We appreciate everybody who tunes in every week. And with that, I will say, this has been the Department of Metal Antiquities. We listened, and now it's your turn.